Hello, this is Tom Scott with the news from Ford County for the week of December 6, 2020. First, the latest on the COVID-19 from the local public health departments. First, from the Ford County Public Health Department, and this is dated December 17th at 3:30 p.m. Ford County Public Health Department is announcing 21 new cases. Ford County has a total of 1,061 cases. Of those, 658 are confirmed and 403 are probable cases, and that's an increase of 117 cases since last week. Sadly, there has been another COVID-19 related death, a female in her 80s, and is associated with an outbreak at Accolade Senior Living in Paxton. There has been a total of 28 COVID-19 related deaths, and that is a total, an increase of 3 from last week. In Iroquois County, as of December 16, there were a total of 2,121 cases, an increase of 156 over last week, and that's 1,834 confirmed cases and 287 probable cases. 1,667 have been released, 401 are currently in home isolation, 6 are hospitalized, and 447 have passed away, and that's an increase of 4 over last week. Females make up 55.6% of the cases, males 44.4%. Negative total tests in Iroquois County, 26,351. Positivity rate of 7%. Public health departments continue to encourage all residents to conduct preventive measures, including practicing the three key steps, the three W's: wash your hands, watch your distance, and wear a face covering. COVID-19 appears to spread from person to person, mainly through close contact, less than 6 feet, but may also be spread by a surface that has the virus and then touching one's mouth, nose, or possibly one's eyes. The Illinois Department of Public Health states that it is spread through respiratory droplets produced when an infected person speaks, coughs, or sneezes. We begin our reading with a seasonal story out of the Ford County Chronicle. Candy Cane Square event set for tonight in Paxton. Paxton. Collecting letters to be sent to Santa at the North Pole has Paxton resident Amy Swan just as excited about Christmas as any kid these days. "It's giving me more joy, I think, than it is the kids," a giddy Swan said Monday. The big red mailbox by Swan's front door at 720 North American Street has already starting to fill up Monday with letters from kids wanting to tell St. Nick what they want for Christmas. "We've got 100 to 200 letters already," Swan said. Santa's elves have said he's enjoying reading all of them. Swan's excitement for the holidays is shared by her neighbors, too. Together, they have decided to team up to hold a unique holiday event this year, a drive-by Candy Cane Square event planned from 5 to 8 p.m. Friday, December 11th, that's tonight, to spread their holiday cheer. The letters to Santa mailbox at Swan's house is just one part of the event, which will also feature tree treats and goodies for kids, along with appearances by Santa, Mrs. Claus, the Grinch, and his dog Max, and Buddy the Elf, in the neighborhood near Paxton's northwest edge. 7 homes will be handing out treats to visitors who drive by, including 705 North Maple Street with candy canes, 725 North Maple Street hot chocolate and goodie bags, 300 West Walnut Street Christmas ornaments, 700 North American Street Christmas suckers, 311 North Oak Street, a Christmas surprise, 315 West Oak Street, chocolate reindeer and a snowman pop, and 720 North American Street, kettle corn, bags of candy, and cake pops. "It's all free," Swan said. Other stations will also be set up along the event's designated route, each distributing items either donated or funded by local businesses. These items include socks, hats, homemade doggy treats, and coupons for cookies at a local bakery. "It's all going to be in our same little square," Swan said. "They'll see where to stop at each station. No one will need to exit their vehicle to receive the goodies, Swan noted, as people handing them out will be by the road. We wanted to be very safe for COVID, so everybody will be there in their vehicle, Swan said. We will all be standing at our driveway handing it to people. Letters to Santa will also be accepted roadside by Swan, who said she will make sure they get promptly to Santa. Santa is writing everybody back, she said. A map of the event's routes can be viewed on the event's Facebook page. Traffic control will be provided by Paxton Police. Swan said the event initially was expected to draw perhaps 100 vehicles, but now she thinks there could be as many as 500 to 700 show up. With so many people expected to attend, Swan said she and her participating neighbors are especially thankful for the donations that have been made toward the event in recent days, either in the form of additional items to be handed out or in the form of money to help fund the purchase of additional items. As soon as we started talking about it, as neighbors, people wanted to help in the community, Swan said. It's just like Paxton. Everybody wants to help out and do things for people. When asked if the event could become a Paxton tradition in the years to come, Swan said it would depend on how this initial one goes. Possibly, I don't know, she said. We'll see if it's not a completely chaotic and a mess. Then, sure. Now a story from the Ford County Board. New Ford County Board leaders signal end to gridlock over wind. Paxton. Two proponents of stricter regulations for the wind industry were placed into leadership roles on the Ford County Board on Monday, signaling the likelihood that the new rules for wind farms could finally be coming after years of deadlock. Yes, that is our hope. It is definitely to have the wind farm issue move forward sooner rather than later, said Cindy Erke of Rural Roberts, who is named the board's vice chairman for the next 2 years. Erke has been one of the more outspoken members of the board in seeking to establish new regulations for wind farms in Ford County. Another is Debbie Smith of Paxton, who was appointed to a 2-year term as the board's chairman on Monday. I'm hoping the wind farm ordinance changes can be finalized soon, Smith said. It needs to be finished and sent to the full board so they can vote on it. Finalizing a new wind farm ordinance has been a long time in the making. Disagreement over what new regulations to implement has persisted despite numerous meetings having been held on the topic in recent years. Meanwhile, a moratorium on the issuance of any more special use permits for wind farms remains in effect until a new wind ordinance is in place. Discussions about the wind ordinance were ongoing until last spring when the COVID-19 pandemic arrived, delaying further talks indefinitely. Erke said she expects the board to begin meeting again to talk about the wind ordinance as soon as the pandemic subsides and meetings to be held to accommodate larger crowds, which are typical when the wind ordinance comes up for debate. With the wind farm issue, it seems a lot of people are interested and show up, Erke said, so we definitely need a venue big enough to hold a crowd and still social distance. Smith and Erke were named chairman and vice chairman respectively during the board's organizational meeting, which occurs every 2 years. Smith replaced Bob Lindgren of Rural Loda as chairman following his departure from the board, while Erke replaced Chase McCall of Gibson City as vice chairman. This is the second stint as chairman for the 67-year-old Smith, who previously filled the role for 6 years until 2008. Smith was nominated for the chairmanship by board member Ann Erke of Rural Buckley, also nominated for the position by board member Chuck Aubrey of Gibson City, was Randy Ferguson of Gibson City. Roll call showed 8 members in favor of Smith's nomination: Cindy Erke, Ann Erke, Smith, Jason Johnson of Rural Paxton, Leslie King of Piper City, Jean May of Rural Paxton, Tom McQuinn of Rural Paxton, and Tim Nuss of Rural Roberts. The 3 members against Smith's nomination: Aubrey, Ferguson, and McCall. Board member Dr. Bernadette Ray of Gibson City was absent. As expected, roll call showed the same 8 members against Ferguson's nomination and the same 3 for it. After Smith was appointed chairman, She asked for nominations of candidates for the vice chairman position, and thus nominated Cindy Erkey, while May nominated McCall. "I respectfully decline," McCall then said. Nominations were then closed, with roll call showing 9 in favor of Cindy Erkey's nomination and 2 against it, Ferguson and Johnson. After the meeting, McCall explained why he declined a second term as vice chairman. "I think it's important to diversify leadership opportunities when available," McCall said in a text message to the Ford County Chronicle. "It allows other board members to experience and perhaps see a different side of the job. Basically, in my opinion, it makes you a more well-rounded public service. I wish both Vice Chairman Erkey and Chairman Smith the best of luck." And we'll go to the Ford County Record for a story from the Paxton City Council. Paxton City Council rewords animal running at large ordinance. Mayor Bill Ingold said he will run again for mayor in the April 6th consolidated elections. Other positions up for election include the clerk and seats held by Alderman Eric Evans, Jonas Hebecki, Susan Satterley, and recently resigned Kamala Johnson Anderson. Satterley said she would not seek re-election. Petitions can be circulated now, and Evans has picked one up. Also, the council approved the rewording of its animal running at large ordinance to: "No person who owns, keeps, or harbors any animal shall permit the animal to run at large within the city." Originally, the ordinance addressed loose dogs. In October, the word cat was added. But Public Safety Committee Chair Rob Pacey said that never meant that cats had to be leashed. "This was never a leash mandate," Pacey said. "The animals must simply be under the direct command and control of the responsible individual." So the ordinance can't fix the issue of feral cats in residential areas because they have no owners. Animal Control Officer Jane Bain said about 8 or 9 years she's addressed that problem by trapping, neutering, and giving the some 280 cats away to farmers who requested them. She said she had state grants back then, but that money has dried up. She will return to trapping in the spring when she receives complaints. Council members discussed possibly allocating some money to pay for the neutering. Bain said one unneutered cat can produce an average of 15 kittens annually. She said the neutering costs $40, euthanizing $65. The council heard about proposed changes to the zoning ordinance that outlined replacing the sidewalks to the original configuration, or at least a 4-foot width and 4-inch depth, and allowing for 24-foot driveway widths in residential areas and 36 feet in others. The Zoning Committee has been meeting monthly to update the city zoning ordinance, and Chairman Slatterly said she expects the work to be complete in April of next year. The council discussed possible zoning changes to areas that look like spot zoning: the block that contains the Bear Family Funeral Home, the 300 South block of Market, and the area east of the courthouse. Businessman Blake Johnson urged the council not to change the zoning of the parcel on East Pells that lies between the fitness center and his wife's business, the Animal House, to residential from commercial. There had been some talk of doing that. The parcel is for sale. It has a house there now. "There is nothing zoned residential contiguous to that lot," Johnson said. "Also nearby is a lot where an old hospital stood, zoned commercial and for sale." Also, the council agreed to sell a small forklift bought 2 years ago to use out at the city's brush pile for $1,000 less than its purchase price of $19,500. It proved to not be as useful as anticipated. The council agreed to add $10,000 to that money and buy a 3/4-ton pickup truck with 4-wheel drive so it can be used to haul a trailer. $10,000 is coming from the fund that is insurance replacement money for the equipment lost in last summer's fire. Also, Police Chief Corey Cornett reported on the business monitoring program he is rolling out that uses QR codes displayed at businesses. Police will scan the code and it will automatically contact the business owner via email, either reporting that all is well or that something is wrong, like a light might be out. Cornett said the department has always performed overnight business checks, but this new system allows for direct communication with the owners. The system can also be used for homeowner vacation checks. The meeting was adjourned to December 15th so the council could vote on changes to employee health insurance. Going forward, all participants and spectators at council meetings will be required to wear a mask. We go back to the Chronicle for some crime news. Paxton man gets 14 years in brutal beating. Paxton. A Paxton man with 8 prior convictions for violent offenses was sentenced last week 14 years in state prison in connection with a brutal beating last year that left another man hospitalized for months and no longer able to live on his own today. Judge Matt Fitton imposed the sentence, 2 consecutive 7-year terms in the Illinois Department of Corrections, on Clayton D. Markham, 35, during a December 9th sentencing hearing in Ford County Circuit Court. It was the maximum sentence Markham could have received under truth in sentencing guidelines. Clayton Markham is a walking, talking, breathing example of a violent offender, and he showed no remorse for the permanent impact his actions had on the victim, State's Attorney Andrew Killian said in a news release. Following a 3-day trial in October, a Ford County jury found Markham guilty of 2 felony counts of aggravated domestic battery for causing great bodily harm to Greg Rutan, 54, on September 1, 2019. Testifying at the sentencing hearing was Rudin's wife, Patty, who told the court that because of the injuries inflicted by Markham, her husband is unable to care for himself and has been forced to live in a nursing home since his release from the hospital. Before this happened, Greg was independent, able to work, take care of himself in all ways, she told Fitton. Now he won't be able to live alone, cook, clean. He can't even change himself. Markham has the opportunity to serve his time and then go on with his life. My husband's life will never be the same. At trial, Paxton police officer Brandon Ryan testified that he was called to 246 East Center Street around 7:30 a.m. on September 1, 2019, and upon arrival found a semi-conscious, half-dressed Rudin lying on the ground in the rain. Rudin was transported to Carle Foundation and Hospital in Urbana, where he would remain for 2.5 months. He was diagnosed with a subarachnoid hemorrhage, a brain bleed, and broken ribs. Meanwhile, Markham was identified as the resident of the apartment that Rudin had been visiting the previous evening. Paxton police executed a search warrant in Markham's apartment and recovered items of clothing that later tested positive for Rudin's blood, along with other samples that showed Rudin had been bleeding inside the apartment. In a subsequent statement to police, Markham admitted that he and Rudin had been in his apartment on the evening of August 31, 2019, when they started drinking and wrestling. Markham admitted to choking and punching Rudin, but explained he did not mean to cause any harm. Markham further admitted that as they were leaving his apartment to continue their evening at a local bar, Rudin was unable to maintain his balance and fell multiple times. Eventually, when Rudin was unable to stand, Markham admitted to stomping on him, telling him to sleep it off, and returning to his apartment while abandoning Rudin outside on the ground. In his argument seeking the court to impose a discretionary consecutive sentence last week, Killian argued that the 2 injuries Rudin sustained, a brain bleed that left him on life support for 3 weeks, and a broken rib, stemmed from 2 distinct and separate incidents despite occurring on the same day. Killian further argued that Markham's criminal history, notably 8 prior convictions for violent offenses, including 6 involving bodily harm or great bodily harm to his victims, showed Markham was a threat to the public. Representing himself at the sentencing hearing, Markham argued that he never meant to harm Rudin. Markham even argued that the fact that Rudin is now confined to a nursing home means he is living a healthier life because he is no longer drinking. Fitton, in ordering Markham to serve 2 consecutive maximum sentences, found that having regard to the nature and circumstances of the offense and the history and character of the defendant, it is the court's opinion that the consecutive sentences are required to protect the public from further criminal conduct by the defendant. Mr. Markham, to this day, does not recognize the damage he caused to Mr. Rudin, Fitton said. He does not accept responsibility for his actions, instead blaming the victim for what occurred, and he exhibits no remorse for having caused such debilitating injuries to his victim. The sentence handed out today will protect the public and ensure that, at least for now, Mr. Markham is incapable of committing further acts of violence against innocent victims. Markham will be given credit of 466 days for time spent in Ford County Jail that will apply to the first seven-year sentence only. Additionally, Markham was fined $13,990, but Killian indicated that the fine will be zeroed out on pretrial credit Markham will be granted. Now we'll turn to the obituaries for Ford County for the week of December 6, 2020. And for some reason this week we have only two. Carolyn Patterson Jansen. Carolyn Patterson Jansen set sail to be with her Lord and Savior on December 5, 2020. She died after an illness related to an autoimmune condition. Following Carolyn's wishes, her ashes will be interred in the Presbyterian Highland Park Presbyterian Church's columbarium in a private ceremony. Donna J. Singleton. Donna J. Singleton, 80, of Paxson, formerly of Roberts, passed away at 1:13 a.m., Saturday, December 12, 2020, at Carle Foundation Hospital in Urbana. Private graveside services will be held at Lyman Township Cemetery in Roberts. Memorials may be made to St. Paul's Lutheran Church or the Roberts Ramp Fund. Now we turn back to the news, the story entitled Sex Offender Arrested in Paxton. Paxton. A convicted sex offender remained Monday at the Ford County Jail after being arrested on a pair of warrants charging him with unlawful presence in a school zone and solicitation of a sexual act with a minor. Police Chief Corey Cornett said Wilbur A. White, 59, was arrested on the warrants on Friday at his residence in the 100 block of West Pine Street in Paxton. Bond was set at $100,000 for the unlawful presence in a school zone charge and $24,000 for the other charge. Paxton police began investigating White after receiving a call from Buckley Paxton Loda School District Chief Staff advising them of a possible sex offender violation. PBL staff told police that White had come onto school district property and was associating with a juvenile. Upon further investigation, it was revealed that Mr. White had been around multiple juveniles in recent days and ultimately made a sexual comment to one of the juveniles that he was hanging out with. After Paxton police received the warrants last week, they tried to locate White, eventually finding him at his residence shortly after 5 p.m. Friday. White allegedly resisted arrest and battered a police officer as he was being taken into custody on the warrants, prompting additional charge of resisting a police officer and aggravated battery to a police officer. And in another crime-related story, Village of Elliott fires Thiesfield as water operator. Elliott. As expected, the Village of Elliott fired Paul Thiesfield as the town's water operator last week following his arrest on felony charges of attempted aggravated criminal sexual assault and attempted aggravated kidnapping. He was essentially fired as soon as I found out about the criminal charges, but we wanted to get that recorded in the minutes of our Board of Trustees meeting last week, so we did so, Elliott Village President Josh Rowley told the Ford County Chronicle on Monday. Rowley said Village Trustees were briefed on the situation during their meeting last week, and all six agreed with his decision to fire Thiesfield. There couldn't really have been any other outcome, Rowley said. Since his December 5th arrest, the 36-year-old Thiesfield has remained at the Ford County Jail in Paxton on a $250,000 bond. He has a preliminary hearing set for January 4th followed by a jury trial 1 week later in Ford County Circuit Court. Charges filed by State's Attorney Andrew Killian on December 7th alleged that Thiesfield intentionally struck a woman with his vehicle in an attempt to incapacitate her so that he could commit a sexual assault. Authorities have released few details other than to say that Thiesfield struck a woman who was walking in Gibson City, then fled the scene and later was arrested after being located at his home in Roberts and questioned by police. At the time of his arrest, Thiesfield was working as water operator in both Elliott and Roberts. On December 7th, the Roberts Village Board President Matt Vaughn terminated Thiesfield's employment in that village effective immediately. Roberts already hired a replacement, Tyler Martin of Thomasboro, who also works as water operator for the village of Rantoul, while Elliott was expected to follow suit during an emergency meeting that was to occur Monday, December 14th. Rowley said there were two candidates Elliott trustees would be considering, including Martin, whom Rowley described as a top-notch water operator. He knows what he's doing. The water operator is responsible for water testing mandated by the Illinois Environmental Protection Agency and maintenance of the water system, among other duties. Because testing of the water is required frequently, and Rowley did not want there to be any gap in the testing schedule, Rowley said that he had already hired Martin on an hourly basis prior to Monday's board meeting, when a longer-term contract was expected to be signed. Getting somebody to do that job, you just can't hire somebody off the street, Vaughn said of the village water operator. You have to have a water license from the state of Illinois, so not just anybody can do this type of stuff. And for our last story today, Country Time Tea Room in Paxton to close. Paxton. Country Time Tea Room in Paxton is closing its doors at the end of this year, following 26 years in business. Bonnie Cade, its owner, announced the impending closure last week. Country Time Tea Room has approached this fall about the potential to sell our property, Cade said, in a statement provided to the Ford County Chronicle. A short time later, the catering business was sold to a separate entity. We needed to make a decision, and it was very clear at my milestone in life that it was definitely an answer to prayer. We will end 26 years of very blessed friendships and business at the end of 2020. A sincere thank you to all who have supported us. Merry Christmas to all, and a blessed New Year. And that's all the time we have for this week's reading of the news from Ford County. This is Tom Scott. I look forward to reading with you again very soon.